Hi, this is Susie Larson. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast of Live the Promise. You know, shows like this are made possible because of your continued support of Faith Radio. To learn more, please check out our website at myfaithradio.com. Thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise. It's hour two, and if you just tuned in, you missed my first hour discussion with Barnabas Piper. He's son of the well-known author and pastor John Piper, and he wrote an honest book. It's titled The Pastor's Kid, Finding Your Own Faith and Identity. Just his own wrestlings of finding his voice, his convictions, his belief system. Such an eye-opening book and story and conversation, really, about the pressures that the church puts on pastors' kids without even realizing it, sometimes holding them to a different standard than others in a way that makes it really hard for them to make their faith their own. Such an eye-opening conversation. If you missed it and you're interested, I'd love for you to go to our website and catch the podcast, myfaithradio.com. Now we're going to switch gears. We're going to talk about navigating coworker relationships and how to come together even when there's a crisis that hits. And so our good friend, Dr. Gary Chapman, who's been on the show lots of times before, he co-authored a book with Paul White and Harold Myra. And we've got Paul and Harold with us today. The title of the book is Sink or Swim, a fable about workplace communication and coming together in a crisis. So maybe you have a little bit of a difficult time navigating some of your coworker relationships. You're in for a treat. I think you're going to have some real takeaway wisdom after today's hour. So let me tell you about my guests. We'll get them on. Dr. Paul White is a licensed psychologist who's worked with individuals, businesses, and families in a variety of settings for over 20 years. He's also spoken and consulted in Europe, Central Asia, the Caribbean, and South America. Harold Myra spent 32 years as the CEO of Christianity Today International. Under his leadership, the organization grew from one magazine to a communications company with a dozen magazines and major internet ministry. He and his wife, Jeanette, are the parents of 6 children and 9 grandkids. Paul and Harold, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good to have you. Well, we love starting out our conversations talking scripture. So, Paul, we'll start with you. You chose Proverbs 13:20. He who walks with wise, the wise men will become wise, but the companion of fools will suffer harm. Talk to us about why you chose that verse.
Well, that's just been a key life verse for me to try to help me continue to form relationships with primarily men that I can learn from and avoid going bad places with bad people and try to just learn and become wiser as I go through life.
My pastor always says, you want to see where you're going to be in 5 years? Take a look at the friends that you're walking with. You know, what direction are they pointing? I don't think we even realize how influential our companions and our friends are. Well, Harold, you chose Mark 12, verse 31. The second great commandment is this, love your neighbor as yourself. Talk to us about that passage.
Well, when I think about this book and the whole idea that our prime command is to love God and our neighbor, that would be our colleague, that would be, in a sense, everybody. If you're going to love them, you have to understand them. You have to listen to them. And that's really what this book is all about, to apply these five languages of appreciation to the workplace and how we can listen and interact and truly show appreciation to others, which it seems to me that that commandment, which Jesus emphasized, is right on.
Well, one of the things we're going to unpack as this hour unfolds is that we all receive appreciation in different ways, and there's a way to show appreciation that doesn't sit right with employees, and so these things are extremely important. Before we get there, though, Dr. White, would you mind giving us a little backstory on not only how you came to Christ, but how you came to realize that God really has appointed you for leadership?
Well, I grew up in the context of a Christian family and was introduced to Christ as a young boy, and then really gave my life to Christ in high school and started, actually was influenced by campus life and then wound up going to Wheaton College and involved with the Navigators there and sort of moved on from there. And, you know, pointed for leadership. You know, I just view my life as trying to become skilled in areas that people need and want that are helpful to them, and then serve the people that God brings to me. And that's just led me down a pathway. And it wasn't, you know, any direction on my part per se, but just always looking for opportunities and trying to take advantage of those to help people.
Being faithful in your stewardship, I mean, what God has given you to do, and he brought the increase, really. That's really wonderful. Harold, how about you? Give us a little backstory on your faith journey and then just how you noticed maybe that call to leadership in your own life.
Well, I'm really an introvert and a reluctant leader. I've always thought about Moses kind of getting dragged into leadership because I was raised in the Pocono Mountains, and I was very happy to be with a book in a corner. Mm-hmm. But I saw in Youth for Christ at that time and later in campus life the energy and the call to a mission to really serve God. And so leadership became just kind of a thing that I needed to do because I loved to write and got involved with a magazine. And then my boss came to me and said, but we want you to do more than editing. We want you to work with circulation and advertising. And I said, no. But, you know, the Lord just kind of says, you're going to do it. And so I've been a reluctant leader, but the joy of the leadership to me has been in working with wonderful colleagues. You know, Philip Yancey and Dean Merrill and Tim Stafford and just many other folks that I've worked so closely with have just been wonderful people. And it's been great working with Paul and with Gary on this book because some of us have been very, very blessed to have colleagues that have encouraged and shown us appreciation.
When you're talking, Harold, I'm thinking of that proverb that says, "Do not claim a place among the great. Better to be called up." And I mean, where you know, uh-huh. I think that's really precious how you've just followed God and served, and He's called you up. And it, sometimes I think even if there is sort of a call of leadership and there's an ambition that goes with it that's not sanctified, so to speak, we can tend to step on people to get our deal done. And so I think it is better to wait on God and trust His timing and do what He says. And so, okay.
Well, you know, I was so interested if we're talking about leadership that, you know, I worked really on this book called The Leadership Secrets of Billy Graham. And if you studied leadership at all, you know Good to Great by Jim Collins is a classic book. And he describes in there the very best leaders, the golden leaders, the ones that you say, these are the ones that have done the most. And he said he was so surprised that they were giving the credit to everybody else and saying, oh, you know, it wasn't really just me, it was the team. It was all of us together. And, oh, yeah, I had a part, but... And when I talked to Billy Graham about doing this book on his leadership, that's exactly the kind of stuff he said. You know, that, oh, well, it was, you know, we had Cliff and we had George Beverly Shea, we had all these people. It was just a team and I was just kind of part of it. And so this attitude of humility that we're really kind of pulled into it by God to do what He shows us to do, I think that's the key.
Indeed. Oh, so well put. Okay, sink or swim. Now, you guys are all high-level leaders, all three of you, and yet you write a fable that involves animals and working together. Before we get into the context, I got to know why. I got to know, like, okay, let's address workplace relationships and do it with a fable involving animals. So I want you both to speak to it if you don't mind, but Dr. Paul, you go ahead.
Well, first I want to make sure people know that sink in the title is S-Y-N-C, like in sinking together versus your kitchen sink. So it's sink or swim, come together, or basically you got to swim for your life. But, you know, what we found is that in the five languages of appreciation in the workplace, where we applied the five love languages to workplace relationships, is that right now over 90% of businesses and organizations have some form of employee recognition program going on. But at the same time, while those have developed employee satisfaction and what they call employee engagement, sort of being actively involved, have actually declined. And so the employee recognition stuff isn't really working. And we found that there's a real difference between sort of going through the motions of having a program versus authentic appreciation, and just found that there's been a real reception to that. But as we talked about it, someone, I don't actually know where the original idea came from, that you know, a lot of people in leadership, and whether it's just supervisors or mid-level people, don't read a lot of business principle books. They're sort of boring sometimes. Mm-hmm. And that we wanted to get the message out in a way that was easy to digest and understand and apply. And stories are the way to do that, you know, and stories have a lot of components that make them valuable in the sense that they involve vision. I mean, we have pictures, and you identify with the character, and so there's an emotional component, and you identify other colleagues, and there's a relational part. And then stories help you remember stuff. It's sort of like, you know, the children's book, The Little Train That Could. What did the train say? You know,
I think I can.
Mm-hmm. I think I can. Anybody knows the story can remember it. And so stories are an easy way to remember and communicate to others core principles. And so we set a course to try to make that happen.
And Harold, you can see different work personalities, I mean, in this fable. So say a little word about that.
Well, I found it very gratifying that when we sent this fable out with all its fun animals and so forth to a lot of managers to have them give their responses, we frequently heard, oh, yeah, I've seen, you know, Alana. I know I've seen this person, this character and that character. So they see these kind of characters as archetypes in their workplaces. And I think Paul expressed so well what stories do, that our brains are hardwired for stories. And Jesus obviously told stories all the time. And when you use animals and you use a fun kind of approach like this with a little drama, people can let down their defenses, and they don't have to think, oh, yeah, this is exactly like so-and-so, and so I'll reject it. No, it's this bird or this beaver or this puppy. And so you can kind of get your brain going in a different way, and then that stimulates discussion.
And we've got some significant takeaways on navigating these relationships, especially if you're a leader, how you convey appreciation, how you really, there's not a one-size-fits-all. You've got to meet people where they're at, determining on their preferences and just how they're wired. And so we're going to unpack some more of that on the other side. If you want a copy, we've got three copies, or Sink or Swim, a fable about workplace communication and coming together in crisis, 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484, or email me, Susie@myfaithradio.com. More with Dr. Paul White and Harold Myra in a moment. We need the world to see Christ in us at home, in the workplace, at church, out on the street. We're talking today about workplace relationships, though, and how to navigate those relationships. Talking to Dr. Paul White and Harold Myra. They co-authored with Dr. Gary Chapman the book Sink or Swim, a fable about workplace communication and coming together in crisis. So it's a story form. It's about these animals. It's really amazing. And you're going to see yourself and other co-workers in the story. And then there's some significant takeaways about how to navigate some of these challenges. 877-933-2484. 877-933-2484. And Harold, you open the book by saying the majority of American workers are driven by praise from their employees, and more so even than money. Say more about why you think that is.
Well, you know, we're all human, and you know, money is important, but we thrive on doing a job, reinforcement of our identity, of getting something done that we really are concerned about. So, you know, all these things that people think are the key factors in bringing satisfaction pale beside the kind of interaction with supervisors, with colleagues that show the kind of camaraderie, the kind of appreciation. So the person says, you know, I am appreciated for what I am. And the person may have very unique personality and the contributions may be very different from somebody else, but they need to sense that appreciation.
Excuse me, and Dr. Paul, you say that they need to be appreciated for more than what they produce. It needs to be a real personal connection, that they're not just sort of a means to an end. Say more about that.
Well, one of the problems in the workplace today is that people really feel like a production unit, and that they only hear praise or good things or get rewarded when they perform well or even above and beyond. And, you know, I don't know about you, but I'm a person and not just a work unit. And I have a life outside of work, and people do. And they resent, actually, in a lot of these sort of performance-based employee recognition programs, they resent sort of this reward focus on just production and say, hey, you know, I have more to offer than that, you know. And so it's really important for us to understand that if you want to communicate that a person is valuable, we need to get to know them as a person. And it's especially true when you have somebody who's not really in the right spot in work. I mean, I've worked in situations where I was not a good match, not a bad person, more than anyone else, really. But, you know, it wasn't about work, but I had value, and we can communicate value even when somebody isn't performing well.
And so, Harold, explain why maybe in a workplace where the employer or the manager may have the best of intentions, but does this broad brush stroke, you know, we're going to do this big, big buffet and all these awards, and it can be premature and not personal, and why and how it can backfire.
Well, if someone doesn't feel appreciated in the day-to-day, when this big event or this little pin that they're going to put on their lapel or whatever comes along, it feels fake. If their supervisor or if the company itself is basically cutting corners and really doesn't care of the individual and isn't listening to the individual, but then, oh, yeah, that's right, we're supposed to show appreciation. It just comes off in a false way. The truth is what's needed is that genuine appreciation that just kind of flows because – And people know whether someone's being sincere and genuine or not. So it needs to be that regular thing. And if it's corporately done in some mechanical way, oh, here's how we're going to show appreciation, it just comes off phony.
Yeah. You know, Dr. Paul, my mom, I always talk about her. She gives gifts in the most specific way. We have 7 kids. Everybody's married and something like 21 grandkids. And there have been times at Christmas time where the label has fallen off the gift, but you open it and you know who it's for because she so knows each of us so well. On the flip side, I've received gifts from people before who know me fairly well, but they buy things on a clearance rack that the next time they have a gift to give, they pull it off the shelf and they wrap it up,
right.
And it could be for anybody, and there's no personal connection. And as much as I love that person, there's nothing about that gift that touches me in any way. It sort of translates like that, doesn't it, at work as well, where if it's like, oh, this is where we give a gift versus who is this person and what speaks to them? I want you just to unpack the importance of a gift given, even if it's just a compliment.
Yeah, and I mean, if we take the language of appreciation of tangible gifts, you're exactly right. In fact, people in the workplace really, I mean, we're not talking about compensation, we're not talking about bonuses, but it's little things, small gifts that you're giving that show that you're getting to know the person and that you think about them outside of work occasionally. And that it can be as small as, you know, their favorite kind of Starbucks coffee, you know, or it could be a magazine you saw on the rack and they, you know, that they are training for a marathon and you pick that up, or tickets to a movie that they'd like to go see. You've heard them talk about. And so it's not so much about the monetary value of something, but that you're getting to know them as a person and that you thought about them and thought they would enjoy it.
And so, Harold, this go ahead.
Well, just last week I had an interesting experience. Keith Stonehocker is a wonderful guy that when I first joined Christianity Today, I hired way back in 1975, and we worked together for 32 years. And he told me last week that he has collected all the notes of encouragement that I've sent to him over the years. And he said it's quite a long list. And it's so easy to do that because you think about who is this person and so forth, and just this little note. And one time I got the idea, well, you know, what would really make him happy is for me to write to his parents in Canada and say what a great employee he is and what a great blessing he is to us. So, you know, I sent that letter to them, and, of course, Keith still has that letter. Well, you know, expressing appreciation is not that difficult. It's just that so many people don't really think about it, but it has such a tremendous impact.
And so that's such a good point, Harold. And Dr. Paul, even speak to this on a colleague level. So not even so much from boss to employee, although that's so important that we understand that we know each person not just as a production unit but as a person, but from colleague to colleague, coworker to coworker. How can this work as well?
Well, in fact, when Dr. Chapman and I first started utilizing the five languages in workplace relationships, we were focused on managers and supervisors. But as I went out and did training and speaking with groups, first of all, there was a lot of pressure on managers, and they felt like, I don't know if I can do all this. But secondly, someone said, hey, I want to know how to encourage my colleagues. And when you think about it, who knows first when somebody's having a bad day? It's mm-hmm. the person that works next to you. And so what we found is that it's critical for both supervisors and managers, as well as colleagues and even across department, people to know how to effectively communicate appreciation in a way that's meaningful to the recipient. And that's really a key part, is that it's about what's important to the recipient, not what's important to you. And sometimes that can be tough to find out. And so we developed an online assessment tool. It's called the Motivating by Appreciation Inventory. And if it comes with the five languages of appreciation book, but it's on our website, appreciationatwork.com, where you can give it to your team and find out. And we actually have a group profile that people can identify how they can encourage one another.
Okay, I have time for one more question quickly here before we take a break. We've got about a minute and a half or so. But Harold, answer this if you would. Have you noticed some common workplace conflicts that you come across over the years? I mean, things that are kind of that keep coming up again and again?
Well, you know, how you fit in your job is always a big thing. And I think people need to really assess, is this job that I'm doing the right one for me? I mentioned Jim Collins' book, and one of the famous things out of it is to get the right person in the bus and then each person in the right seat on the bus. And so there's a lot of conflict when a person isn't able to do the job. Another is bosses and colleagues who just really don't care about other people. One of the things that's been going through my mind is how do you tell whether a work environment is a positive one? And my little measure is laughter in the halls.
Wow.
I mean, if you walk in and you hear people laughing, which I so often did walking into the wing of Christianity that had the CT editors and somebody. And so there's that sense of, hey, we're all in this together. We're colleagues. And that sense that, hey, we're here not only to work very, very, very hard, but also to enjoy each other and to affirm each other.
Well, we are super, super healthy here at Faith Radio because we like to laugh in the hallway. Yes. Talking to Dr. Paul White and Harold Myra. Sink or swim, you're so quiet today. I want to hear from you. 877-933-2484. We've got three copies of this wonderful fable with some great takeaways about navigating coworker relationships. 877-93-FAITH. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
In the dark, in the light, in the morning and night, in the good, in the
for tuning in. I'm Susie Larson, still battling a bit of a cold. Excuse my voice. This is Live the Promise. Talking to Dr. Paul White and Harold Myra, they co-authored a book with Gary Chapman called Sink or Swim. It's a fable about workplace communication and coming together in crisis. You know, we want to address this because I almost never address worker relationships, and yet most listeners are at a job somewhere dealing with coworker relationships. And so they wrote a fable. It's so interesting, with these different animals, but a workplace situation. And as you read it, you can see different personalities of people you may work with. But the takeaways are so key. And so let's unpack a few of those if we could. We touched on this, but I want you to maybe unpack a little bit more if you would, Dr. White. You can't communicate genuine appreciation with a broad brush. Say a little bit more about that.
Well, you can try,
yeah.
But it doesn't work well.
Yeah.
And one of the things we know is that, you know, people are busy and leaders are busy, and we're not here to try to create another to-do list for them. But what we do is help people be effective and efficient in communicating praise and encouragement so that it's received. I mean, one of the interesting things is that there's a study that showed that 65% of the workforce said that they had received no recognition for a job well done in the past year.
Wow.
And when I first read that, I was astounded at the statistic. Can that be true? But as I've worked with leaders and groups, I found that the key word is that they haven't received it. It's often leaders that will say, well, it can't be my group because, you know, I send out emails and say thanks and all that. But often it's not in the way that's important and meaningful to the recipient. And we need to understand that, just like in personal relationships with love, that for some people, words don't mean much. I've had people say, you know, words are cheap. I had one leader say, you know, I grew up in a context where if somebody complimented you, the next thing that was coming was an ask.
Hmm.
And that, you know, they were setting you up to get something. He said, so when I hear a compliment, my defenses go up and say, you know, what do they want from me? And so some people need encouragement and to feel valued by spending time with them. It doesn't have to be a lot of time. It can be stop by their office and see how they're doing. Some people prefer to have a little help when they're behind on a project, and that if you sort of go out the door and say, hey, hope you get that done tonight, you know, it creates resentment versus maybe hanging out with them and, you know, help them put notebooks together or whatever.
You know, why wouldn't you think about it when these love languages were such a runaway bestseller because they were light bulb moments for so many couples? You know, let's say you've got somebody who's, you know, quality time and acts of service, and her husband is kind and gentle, but he's not available and not helpful. And so she's like, he's nice, but he's not there for me, so it's not love. Well, why? How would that not translate in the workplace? So let's pause here and talk a little bit about these five languages of appreciation kind of taken from the language love languages. We'll kind of alternate here. Harold, we'll talk with you first. Words of affirmation, a simple verbal compliment or word of encouragement expressed either orally or in writing. So a person who this is one of their love languages, they need words of affirmation. Say more.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, the workplace is so pressured these days. And with all of the transitions and people are afraid of their jobs, and so we're so focused on what we have to get done to get around to just simply giving a word of affirmation that doesn't come into mind. You know, just yesterday I was talking to my 28-year-old son and talking about some of these kinds of things. And he said, man, he said, I've never had that in any of my work situations. So there's this vacuum, in a sense, that a word of affirmation is this wonderful, nourishing kind of thing, but we just don't think about it most of the time. And to get into a habit of reaching out to our colleagues, to whoever we're around, with words of affirmation to simply say what we genuinely affirm. I mean, we can't say phony baloney stuff that mm-hmm. we are just saying anything that comes to mind. We need to think about, okay, what is this person like? And listening to the person and then affirming that person for maybe just a good spirit or a can-do attitude.
And even praying, you know, God, show me those for whom this is their love language or their appreciation language.
Uh-huh.
And so I can be
uh-huh.
in the right place at the right time. Because even as Christ followers, ahead of being workers, is that we would be sensitive to his spirit and be sources of encouragement for others. So, I mean, just,
and it's not all that complicated
no.
because you can't really mess up and try one language. It's not going to hurt.
Yeah.
But you do these things, these words of affirmation and quality time and so forth, and you see where the person resonates.
Mm-hmm.
And where the person really responds in a positive way.
Okay, so quality time, Dr. Paul, communicating value by giving your focused attention or inviting the person to spend time with you and other colleagues. You know, I have a boss who's got this open door policy. If I have ideas, I have questions, he's accessible. And I, because quality time is one of my languages of appreciation, that I will do backflips. I'll go 200% because I feel so protected, and I have a voice there. And so I want you to talk about just the importance for those who for whom this one is theirs, quality time, what that can look like on a colleague basis, but also an employer-employee relationship.
Yeah, and Susie, you're exactly right on that. It looks differently, and that's one of the things that we found in the development of the inventory, the Motivated by Appreciation inventory, is that it's not only the language that's important, but also the specific actions. So quality time, there's some people that would like some personal one-on-one time with their supervisor, but I've had some people say, I do not want individual time. They're pretty intense and intimidate me, but I'd love to go out and hang out over lunch or after work with my colleagues. And so one of the things we've been able to do is identify not only the language, but the specific actions and from whom you want that action. And so that the time, again, doesn't have to be a lot. I had one CFO tell me, my language is time, but I just stop by and check in for 5 minutes how I'm doing that. I'm going to boot you because I got too much to do.
Mm-hmm.
But just, you know, a few minutes can really make a difference. Mm,
very good. Acts of service, Harold. A simple act that can help make a colleague's day go better, working with them to ensure the time-sensitive project is completed, for example. Say more.
Well, yeah, and to see where a person is hurting, where they're pressured, where just some little clearing the decks for that person, or just getting beside them and encouraging them. You know, not everybody wants that kind of help. Some people just like to do it all themselves, but others, having a partner beside them, having someone that says, oh, I see, maybe you could try this. And you can tell when a person really wants that kind of interaction and that kind of involvement.
Mm. All right, Dr. Paul, tangible gifts, a small gift that shows that you're getting to know your coworkers and what they like. We touched on this one, but maybe a few more creative ideas there.
Well, one of the things that we found is that only 10% of the population cite tangible gifts as their primary language. But employee recognition programs use that as a key reward, but what we have found is that a tangible gift along with one of the other languages, whether it's words or time or acts of service, is experienced as very meaningful, whereas gifts by themselves feel very superficial to people. If it's you just get this gift, nobody says anything or they don't help you out with stuff. And so tangible gifts is an interesting one that it can help sort of multiply the efforts and time of other languages.
And what a great distinction, because if you think that you know the majority don't this isn't their language, and yet that's the most consistent way maybe employers try to convey appreciation, you can sure see a disconnect unless it's coupled with other things. So,
right.
Wow, good point. Okay, final one, Harold, is physical touch. And I know this can be tricky in the workplace, but you wrote spontaneous celebration of a positive result, fist bump when a project is completed, congratulatory handshake. But still, this may be a deal breaker for somebody who just feels like just that affirmation means the world to me.
Yeah, obviously, this isn't like marriage and family and so forth. We have to be very careful in the way we express that physical touch. But, you know, there's all kinds of ways. There's sports things and just that touch on the shoulder, that kind of engagement that some people just respond. And, you know, sometimes hugs are very, very appropriate. We've done a lot of hugging in companies that I've been in very appropriate ways, and that's very important. So I think it can be in the workplace and should be, but it obviously has to be very carefully done.
Okay, so we talked about these five languages of appreciation. I want to pull out some of the takeaways from this fable that are so important for those of us in the workplace. You say, I'll go this to Dr. Paul, that there's not a one-size-fits-all approach to creating this healthy work environment because people differ. And we, again, touched on this, but if you don't mind, just what this means for not only leaders but colleagues, because we're all different with different preferences. How do you navigate those relationships wisely since there isn't a one-size-fits-all?
Well, I think people are forgiving, you know, and you can try. For example, I did some volunteer work and for my church, and they sent me a nice handwritten card, and they gave me a gift card to Starbucks, which is great, but I don't drink coffee. Hmm. So, you know, I got the message, but it didn't mean a whole lot. And a few months later, I did something else, and they gave me another card, and this time was with a gift card to a sporting goods place. And I love to fish, and so I was all excited about getting some free fishing lures and all that. And so it's not a right or wrong thing, but it's just the impact was really different. And I just want to encourage, especially for Sink or Swim, this book is not just for leaders. It's for anyone who works in a place with other people, you know, and because what we found is you can make a difference in the relationships right around you. You don't have to be a ordained leader from a positional point of view. And that it's an easy read. It's about an hour read. It's sort of fun. And you then can get a better sense of, okay, this is sort of what this person's like, you know, that's a little bit sort of quieter and standoffish and or somebody that's a little bit gruff, and how you can maybe relate to them effectively.
That's such a good word. And I'd actually love for both of you to speak to this next question. I'll tell you, you know, just at work at our station, we do have a very healthy team. There's always room for growth and improvement. But the two things that I marvel at that I'm so grateful for is there's just not an ego on the team. And there's no I feel like there's just this airtight, there's not gossip here. I mean, I think everybody has a personal walk with the Lord in such a way that we all walk in the fear of God, that there's just not an opening to talk about other people. And I love that because it really creates a place of safety, and we have a reverence for God, and we all work our tails off. But you sure can see how those two things could instantly change the dynamic. If one person came in with an ego and maybe with a loose tongue, how that could disrupt the whole apple cart. And so, Harold, why don't you speak to that first, if you would?
Oh, that is so well said. I mean, you've captured it. In fact, I remember some very wise people just talking about the control of the ego. We all have to have an ego in order to function, in order to get things done. And if we're going to take on large responsibility, we have to have an ego. But is it a redeemed ego in the sense that we've put it before the Lord, and that we have that sense of humility, which is, in one sense, the mark of the Christian? And so there's this fascinating alchemy of humility and ego that come together. And if the intent is to really bless everyone around us, and in a sense to think of the beginning of the day, okay, how can I bless the people where I work? And boy, it may be a frenetic, difficult situation, but each person can bring that spirit of I'm going to try to bring my ego under control, and the whole idea of gossip and talking about others in a negative way, I mean, that's obviously something that is just poison in the environment. So to reverse that and say, how can I put blessings? You know, in another book that Paul and Gary and I wrote on toxic workplaces, we told the story of a woman who had a toxic boss. And she was determined, because she was seated right outside his office, she was not going to in any way transfer some of his toxicity to the other employees in the company. And so, you know, some of the listeners may be in very difficult situations, but to be able to come in and say, hey, I'm going to look around at people and I'm going to try to bless them.
Mm. Oh, that's so good. Dr. Paul, what do you say?
Yeah, we did write this book. It's called Rising Above a Toxic Workplace, and have created some resources for people that are in tough situations, and it's all of them are at the Appreciation at Work website. But the thing that I've learned, especially for Christians, is that we need to speak the truth in love. And I find, you know, I've lived in different parts of the country, and sort of our southern brothers and sisters, sometimes they speak in love, but they don't speak the truth. Sometimes they keep quiet, or they sort of indirectly say things, or they sort of, you know, just distort things a little bit where they're not totally truthful. Whereas those of us that maybe live in the Midwest or upper Midwest or Northeast, we speak the truth, but we sort of bludgeon people with it sometimes, and not in love, and, you know, and sort of, you know, if you can't, you know, deal, you know, handle it tough. And really there is that balance of truthful, because in a toxic workplace, people direct communication that's healthy is not there. And clearly, speaking the truth in love is a goal that we should have in our workplace relationships. Mm.
And that's really what establishes so much trust when we're able to do that. Where I'm in your corner, I'm not going anywhere. We're going to work this out. This, you know, this isn't a deal breaker in our relationship. Talking to Dr. Paul White and Harold Myra about workplace relationships. I see your call, Karen from Cloquet. We'll take it in just a moment. This is your last chance to get in a call. I saw a few calls come in. I'd love to hear from you. 877-933-2484 or email me, Susie@myfaithradio.com. Be right back. People ask me why I live my life this way. I'm going to say I'm unashamed of you. I love that song. So glad you tuned in. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise. The second hour of Live the Promise, we're talking about navigating work relationships, talking to the very wise Dr. Paul White and the very wise Harold Myra. And we welcome your questions, 877-933-2484. Karen's calling in from Cloquet, Minnesota with a question. Karen, welcome.
Hi, Susie. Before I forget, I really liked your Rebooting the Christian Life last night. The songs were good. It was really nice.
Oh, great. I'm so glad.
Yeah. I just wanted to say on the way home today, it was so appropriate because I work in an extremely toxic work environment, and I'm the only Christian on site. And through lots of prayer and looking at scriptures on reaching out and servitude and that kind of thing, I felt really prompted by the Holy Spirit to form a mission called Open Wide Your Hands. It's taken from Deuteronomy 15. I believe it's chapter 15. And the phrase right in there is open wide your hands. And what I vision is that I reach out to other Christians in the workplaces, and then we join together so that we can prayerfully reach out to our coworkers, because there's so many people hurting. I got one coworker in my office who is just really the most unpleasant person you can imagine, and she purposely makes herself unpleasant, I believe.
Yeah.
But I thought, as I got to talk to her and really was aggressive at seeking out her need, she has never had a solid, kind word said to her in her life, and so I set about doing that. And whether it's changed her, I don't know, but it has changed me. And when I identified myself as a Christian by my boss, she found a way to finally, I still have my job, but I have 3 days off without pay. So that was kind of a kick in the shorts, but you know, that's what happens sometimes. But so anyway, all these things that he's saying, I thought, oh, this is just so, it's solidifies what was kind of brought to me in the same scriptures that I read. So
Karen,
I just wanted to share that.
I think you'll get a copy of the book, and I want to thank you so much for calling. 877-933-2484. Dr. Paul, do you want to comment at all? Karen's on hold now, but do you want to comment on anything?
Well, you know, it is true that we need, especially in difficult workplaces, we need people that we can band together with. And one of the strategies to survive and beyond is to make sure you have social support, whether that's in the workplace or somebody, a friend or a family member outside that you can bounce your thoughts and ideas and reactions to. Because when we're in a toxic workplace, we tend to, our thinking gets foggy, and we're not sure if we're thinking straight. And so it's really important to band together with others for that support.
Mm. You know, Harold, I'd love for you to just talk a moment about the leaving. Sometimes people leave before they leave, you know what I'm saying, where they get it in their head, I'm going somewhere else, or I have other ideas lined up, and they leave emotionally and mentally before they physically leave. And as a Christian, that's a problem, I think, because we've got to find some way to stay faithfully until it's time to leave, so we leave well, or we stay too long, and the grace has lifted, God has called us on, the pillar has moved, and we're still so afraid, we're stuck. And I feel like for that case, it's like the grace lifts and suddenly we become so miserable. And that's when you start to see relational breakdown, performance breakdown. And so I want you just to speak to that whole idea, because not every job and workplace with a person is a fit. And so about the whole idea, if you're sensing change, how to navigate that?
Well, in a sense, we're all on an adventure in life, and life is, you know, full of stress and difficulties and challenges and also blessings and joys. And the kind of toxic workplace situations that we've found and tried to address in this, there are no, you know, simple answers, but it drives us, in a sense, spiritually to find out what does God really want of me in this situation. And in some situations, wow, you just really have to get out of there before it ruins your health. In other situations, you can really be a blessing. And it seems to me that the whole spiritual journey that we're on, I love what the caller said about listening to this crabby person, this unhappy person, because we've got some other stories of people like that who have done the same thing. Somebody that was toxic, was difficult, but, you know, was going through terrible things in personal life. So all these situations are difficult, and I like what you said about how we need to approach them, and it really is part of a spiritual journey.
So, Dr. Paul, talk about the whole idea of tone, tone of voice, body language. That's something you guys addressed in the book as well, especially when you're dealing with somebody who's difficult, because the temptation is to fight or flight, you know, or to react to what they're acting like. And but I think the call is something much deeper. What do you say?
Hey, you know, the issue of authenticity, of appreciation or recognition is huge, because people can misinterpret what we do often, especially for introverts. When they are talking, they are anxious, and so they look down, and they sort of hem-haw, and, you know, you're wondering, what's going on with this person? And you think, do they mean this, or are they just – did somebody tell them they have to do it? And then we start to question their motives. And first of all, I would tend to say, if somebody's giving you a compliment or praise, I would give them the benefit of the doubt and say that, you know, they mean it. Because it's really rare, I think, that people try to manipulate through that way. And we have to be aware of cultural differences. You know, in some minority cultures, looking at an authority figure is viewed as disrespectful. Whereas in the majority white culture, if you're an authority figure, you often want them to look you in the eye. And so we can easily misunderstand things. And so one way is just to clarify and say, you know, what's the real message you're trying to get to me here? And then try to believe them.
Mm. Well, this has been a great conversation, guys. And I appreciate so much your work to really equip us to navigate these relationships. And so wondering as we wrap up, Harold, would you mind praying for that listener today who's maybe in a toxic work environment trying to figure out how to navigate those waters? Would you pray for that person today?
I'd be happy to. Lord, we just ask that you would touch that person with your grace. Thank you for the good thoughts that you've put into her mind through the scriptures. And we pray you'll give her the kind of wisdom and the encouragement, and many others like her who struggle with these kind of situations. We pray for your great blessing and enrichment. Amen. Mm.
Dr. Paul White and Harold Myra, thank you so much for giving us your time today and all the work that you do for the kingdom. Appreciate you both.
Thank you.
Good to be with
you. Thanks for the opportunity.
Yeah, God bless you. Title of the book, again, is Sink or Swim, a fable about workplace communication and coming together in a crisis.
When it feels like I'm going crazy and it looks like nothing's changing, come sun, come rainy day, you are still the same. In the dark, in the light, in the morning and night, in the good, in the hurt, in the places I hide, when I rise, when I fall, you'll be there through it all. At the start, at the end, in the center of the center of.
Thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise. You can find a podcast of both hours on our website at myfaithradio.com. Don't forget, you can start signing up now for our 40-day Lenten journey. It's a physical, spiritual challenge. It's going to be great. Last year, we had 4,000 of you sign up. You'll find more information at the website, myfaithradio.com. Finally, I'll leave you with this. The Lord wants you to last long and finish strong, and He is the one who'll keep you strong to the end. Have a great day.